Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. Thanks so much for joining us on the podcast every week talking college baseball. Aaron, we're a month into the college season, and there's been a lot of movement in our top 25 already, which is and some of it has been a big surprise. So let's just jump right into this week's rankings and this week in college baseball. And let's just – I think it's always instructive. It's easy, I think, to take the top teams for granted. But chalk at the top of our rankings, three of the top four being from the Southeastern Conference's East Division, Florida, Vanderbilt, Oklahoma, the interloper there at three, South Carolina at four. I guess the most noteworthy things in here, A, Florida just keeps on rolling, and I talked to a scout this weekend who just kept on raving about Brian Johnson the same way that you've been talking about him, but just hearing that again was interesting. Second of all, Vanderbilt, kind of steady as she goes, 16-1 for the Commodores. And then South Carolina finishing up a series win against Clemson earlier in the week. A lot of heated controversy going on in that series that seemed to die down after the series was over. And then taking care of business against a plucky upstart Cal State Bakersfield team. Let's talk about the Gamecocks for a second. They brought back their Friday starter, Michael Roth, to finish off that Clemson series. Obviously, I don't want to get into the leaving the bats out into the sun and all that stuff, but, you know, how big of a deal was that series win for South Carolina over Clemson, and what's your take on the defending national champions here 4 weeks in?
Well, certainly that was a big series, and, you know, I think the reason they brought Roth back for, one batter, I think. I mean, you know, it was probably a throw day for him anyway. It was a Tuesday game. But, But you know, I mean, that was a big series, obviously. It was a huge series for them, much bigger than it otherwise would have been because of what happened, you know, over the weekend with the bats and, you know, Will Lamb's comments kind of calling out Tyler Webb. And you know, the whole thing was ratcheted up to an insanely feverish pitch. And you know, South Carolina wanted that one bad. You know, you could see it in their comments afterwards. You know, and then they got it. And South Carolina, you know, they're the defending champs, I think, are they've played like we thought they were capable of playing, but we weren't certain they would play this way. You know, they've lived up to their potential, what they've done. Their pitching has been basically as good as you could have hoped. I mean, once again, their bullpen is a strength. But, you know, Michael Roth and, you know, Stephen Neff and Adam Westmoreland, those guys have stepped forward in the weekend rotation as they needed to. And, you know, and certainly they've hit. We thought they would hit, and we thought they'd play defense, and they've done those things. So South Carolina, it's so far so good. It's just been a best-case scenario so far, I think.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I think you're right, because the questions that we had about them so far, I mean, Michael Roth was just so money in Omaha last year. And talk about some carryover. You don't always see carryover from one year to the next, but, man, he was clearly good enough to start, but I don't think – It's one thing to become a starter. It's another thing to become a Friday guy and your team's go-to pitcher, and he's done it. And like you said, I mean, coming into the year, they have a lot of the same pieces back, but no Blake Cooper, who was their guy for, what, 3 years?
Yeah, I mean, he pitched in a lot of games there for 4 years, and certainly he was their guy last year. And Sam Dyson was, you know, also a workhorse and a big power arm. So those are two big pieces to replace. And Michael Roth's numbers are terrific. I mean, he's got a sub-1 ERA now. He's got 30 strikeouts and 7 walks in 27 innings. I mean, he's just been really, really good. He's been a legit ace so far.
There's no doubt. I think tip of the cap, a wag of the finger, to use a Stephen Colbert phrase, to Michael Roth. I don't know why I'm wagging the finger, but I'm tipping the cap. We came very close at number 5, Aaron, to the entire poll meltdown. I shouldn't use that phrase right now. I shouldn't make light of meltdown. But well, the rankings got really dicey after 4. I don't even remember, frankly, because I can't find my notes, where we left what we did at number 5. We did leave Texas at 5, did we not?
We did. We thought about having a little bit of a market correction there. And, you know, we were going to move up Florida, UVA, and LSU as a group because those
Florida
three
State.
Teams all have – I'm sorry, Florida State, thank you. Those three teams all have, I think, just one loss. And you know, they've played well. And especially, you know, UVA and LSU are coming off huge series wins on the road for UVA at Clemson, at home against Cal State Fullerton for LSU. And you look at Texas, and, you know, they've got five losses. They haven't swept anybody. You know, they have losses to Brown and Maryland in there. But they also won three out of four games in both those series. And, you know, we thought about moving them down a few spots. And it's a tough one because we did move TCU down three spots, and it almost seems like a comparable situation. The difference is Texas hasn't lost a weekend series yet. They just had a 4-1 week, and it just seemed a little too hard. Harsh to move them down three spots after a 4-1 week.
Yeah, and I mean, the Longhorns, you know, it seems like they and UCLA have some similarities. I'm not trying to jump too far ahead, but they were both ranked in the top five in the preseason, I guess top six. UCLA, Texas was six, because of dominant weekend rotations, dominant pitching. Texas also has had some real nice success out of its bullpen, maybe a little bit stronger to this point than UCLA's has been. But we had real questions about both teams' offenses. It seems like Texas has done just enough offensively here. And do you think that the Longhorns are going to be able to pick – are there signs the Longhorns' offense will pick up to a level close to last year's? I don't think we can expect them to be at last year's offensive level considering how experienced and veteran the middle of their lineup was last year. But do you think Texas's lineup will be what are the signs that we have that Texas's lineup will improve and continue to improve this year?
Well, you know, first of all, Texas's lineup is really nothing like last year's lineup. I mean, I think last year they set a school record with 81 home runs, and
right.
this team's, you know, not going to sniff that. It's just a completely different kind of lineup. It's back to Augie Ball. It's back to bunting with your cleanup hitter, you know, rather than
right.
letting Cameron Rupp swing away or Kevin Keyes or one of those guys. You know, they got a big home run this weekend. From Eric White, and they actually have hit a few home runs. I think they've got two or three now. You know, it's a power surge, but their offense is going to be fine. I mean, they're not going to blow people out most of the time, but they're not going to give up many runs. And you know, I think they're going to score enough. And I still believe the same is true of UCLA. And I will say that coming into the year, you know, I thought UCLA's offense was going to be fine because it was decent last year, and they had most of the same guys back, but they just haven't hit. And, you know, talking with John Savage this weekend, after that demoralizing loss they had on Friday when Garrett Cole had a perfect game going into the seventh and 11 strikeouts, and he was as good as, you know, as any college pitcher I've ever seen for six innings. I mean, he was insanely good. And then they lost the game. They couldn't hit, and, you know, Georgia had a bidding, that was it. But John Savage, you know, afterwards said, you know, some of these guys were really good for us last year. They just don't look like the same hitters with these new bats. And you have to wonder, you know, I don't want to get myself in trouble here with any of our advertisers, but there's some talk out there from some coaches that it might vary from bat manufacturer to bat manufacturer. Not all of them might have done as good of a job with the BB Corps bats. So I'm saying that that's the reason, and certainly UCLA is not saying that's the reason. But I wonder that. I'm throwing that out there. I wonder if all bats are created equal with these BB cores.
I think it's very possible they are not all created equal. They were not all created equal beforehand. So I think it's probable that they are not all created equal, and I think it's very likely that you're going to see some differences. But that said, I think that you can't use the bats as an excuse, even if they are different. There's still other ways to score than slugging home runs. I mean, I think you got to get past that mentality if you're UCLA. You know, you can't.
You're right. You're right. And you know, UCLA on Friday, I think they struck out 11 times against Alex Wood, a guy who basically was just throwing fastballs for the most part. I mean, he mixed in a slider and occasional change, but it was probably 80% fastballs at 90, 91 miles an hour, and UCLA just wasn't hitting them. You know, I mean, if you strike out 11 times, it's not the bat's fault. You're not making contact.
I agree. And, you know, UCLA's only got 9 sacrifice bunts all year. You know, that surprises me. In 14 games, they only have 9 sacrifice bunts. When you're slugging 323, I expect you to try to play a little more Augie ball. You know, Rick Vanderhook learned Augie ball from Augie. It surprises me that UCLA is not doing that. I didn't mean to jump ahead, though, and jump on the Bruins. But since we are talking about the Bruins, the other team that we dropped them to 24 in the rankings, Rice drops to 25. Aaron, it sounds like you almost have a little bit more confidence right now, or maybe not so much confidence, but that Rice's resume is a little stronger than UCLA's at this point. And I mean, there's a couple ways to look at it. I mean, Rice has played eight ranked teams. UCLA has not played any. So 3-5, ten and three and five against top 25 teams, and 10-8 overall for Rice. And I guess the surprising thing is that Rice is just not quite hitting like we thought they would this year.
Yeah, they've been a little bit up and down, I feel like they maybe are getting some answers on the mound now. I think that they liked what they saw from Chase McDowell on Sunday. That was probably a very encouraging thing for them, because he's a guy that they liked a lot in the fall. He was up to 94, showed you a good breaking ball, and he threw a complete game on Sunday when they needed it. They needed to win. Maybe now the rotation is settling in. They still have Matt Reckling in the mix. Austin Kubitsa and John Sims. I think those arms are good. I really do believe that their pitching staff is going to be fine. They need to be more consistent offensively. They're hitting 270 as a team. Even Anthony Rendon cooled off a little bit this weekend, and the rest of the lineup, they only have one other guy hitting 300, and that's Craig
Yeah.
Manuel.
And that's obvious. His quality is obvious by his name,
Exactly.
but they're not defending too much either, Aaron. That seems to be an issue for them. They had a bad weekend defensively. It seems that they're also a little bit banged up offensively, aren't they? Isn't there a starter missing there? Michael Fuda, I guess, is injured or has been this year.
Fuda's got a hamstring issue, so I think when he comes back, that'll certainly help. And when Rendon can play third base again, their defense, I think, will be much better. I think what we've seen is evidence of just how valuable he is defensively. Their defense suffers without him on the field.
Yeah, there's a doubt about it. I mean, that's perfectly understandable. He's just a Gold Glove caliber third baseman. He's a almost a Ryan Zimmerman level defender. He's not quite that good, like the way, especially when Zimmerman was at the college level, where people thought he was like the best defensive third baseman they'd seen in college baseball. But Rendon's like only a notch below that. I mean, that's not a very big notch.
And speaking of third base, I mean, that's Paul Maneri told me last week, and I agree with him that it's an underrated defensive position, and that's why he made the switch. He moved Tyler Hanover back to third base, and we just saw within the last week or so, last weekend, Vanderbilt moved Jason Esposito from shortstop back to third base, and the impression that I got is because they were having problems at third base, not because they were having problems at shortstop.
That's fascinating. I remember talking to Pat Murphy a long time ago when I was doing a Freshman of the Year story on Xavier Nady, and he was talking about how hard third base was in college baseball because the balls, especially with the old bats, the minus five bats, because you had to play so deep because the ball would just explode off these bats. And if you were playing your normal depth in college baseball, and even with the minus threes, you're playing pretty far back because the ball could explode off the bat. And then conversely, you had guys bunting, a lot. There were a lot of bunts. So third base was just an incredibly difficult position to play. And now I think all these defenders, as you wrote about in the preseason, but I think we've both seen as we go to games this year, you're having to relearn the sound of the ball off the bat and how to react to swings, how to react to the sound of the ball off the bat with these new bats. Third base is a huge challenge, and I think there's even more bunting now, it seems like. I would imagine there's more bunting now. As teams have less confidence in their eight-hole hitter's ability to go oppo and hit a home run. It's just not happening with these bats. So third base even more of a challenge. I think that's pretty fascinating. Let's just focus on some of the teams that are off the grid start there, and the teams that we moved up. And I guess there are two ACC clubs that had really impressive weekends this year. This weekend, conference play started in the ACC. Florida State sweeps, Boston College. They should sweep Boston College when they're at home, frankly. But then UVA going on the road to Clemson, huge, huge weekend for the Cavaliers. And Aaron, I think you wrote about it on the blog. And if we had a midseason player of the year, a 1 month player of the year, it would be Virginia's Danny Hultson, and it probably wouldn't even be close.
He's been insane, and it's not just because of his numbers on the mound, which are really good. I mean, he's 4-0, he's a 0.66 ERA, and it's 50 strikeouts and four walks in 27 innings. That alone, and I know they haven't played necessarily the strongest schedule, but they have played East Carolina, and now they've played Clemson, and he was great against those two teams that are quality teams. And on top of that, he's hitting .372. He's got 16 RBIs. He's second on the team in hitting. He's been so valuable. And I'm glad we had him on the first team preseason All-American team in the preseason as a two-way guy because because he's making a big impact on both sides and you know it seems like every time he starts a game on the mound he also helps himself with the bat. He's just one of those guys. And you know Virginia, what a huge series for those guys on the road. You know, I think they've proven right now that they're the class. Them and Florida State are the class of the ACC. Virginia's the class of their division. I think that's pretty clear. You know, Tyler Wilson moving to the weekend rotation has worked out great for Virginia. It's helped that they've got some more depth in their bullpen this year. Brandon Klein seems pretty well suited for the back of the pen. Generally, Cody Winarski has been good on Sundays. He was not good this past weekend, but it's nice for Virginia that you know if for some reason Winarski doesn't work out. They can move Brandon Klein back into the rotation, or they can, you know, move Wilson around. They've got some options, but I think right now they like the way their pitching staff is set up, and they're hitting too. I mean, I just think that they're a good solid team.
And the most impressive thing to me, Aaron, is that a lot of times we've talked about strength of schedule and playing kind of some cupcakes early, like you know UVA basically did. That did not seem to affect them when they played opposing top 10 team on the road in Clemson. They were ready. Yeah. And I don't know if that's because they got used to the bats. They've only got one home run as a, you know, the whole team. They've got eight. You know, Keith Werman has as many sacrifice bunts on his own as Texas has. But I mean, like we talked in the preseason, they would be a team that should adapt pretty well to the style because they always play in their home ballpark is not a home run ballpark. They don't usually play for the home run. They've been kind of a pitching and defense team all along. But I don't think we expected them to be. After this kind of a start, I mean that's pretty loud to go down to Clemson and shut them down the way they do.
Yeah, and let's not forget that they started the season this year on the road down at Auburn at that tournament, so they had some experience, you know, in a little bit of a different environment. And there's a lot of veterans on this team too, the guys that have been around, and you know, there's some young players too. They lost a lot of veterans from last year's team, but you know the Holtson types and the Stephen Prochas, and you know I love Stephen Procha. He had a big weekend, 4 for 5 yesterday with a home run. You know those guys I think are stabilizing forces.
Well, there's their first home run. And speaking of two-way ACC players, Sean Gilmartin was the other left-hander and hitter who got a lot of support on our All-America team for the utility position, which was surprising because. He's not even the best utility player on his own team. the best two-way player at Florida State is Mike McGee, obviously. But the Seminoles just rolling, even after some pretty significant losses from last year's club. And Gilmartin is one of the guys who's making that team go. He's really after really struggling down the stretch last year, he's been outstanding this year, and they seem like they've got a lot of answers and a lot of options in their bullpen and their rotation as well, Aaron.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, Gilmartin, it sounds like he's finally discovered that out pitch that he was missing last year. I've talked to some people about him, and it sounds like his changeup is a plus pitch now. And, you know, he needed that. But he's been really, really good on Friday nights. You know, he's throwing strikes. He's got 35 strikeouts and 3 walks in 29 innings. So he's missing bats. And it's funny because, like you said, the scouting directors gave him a lot of support as a two-way player, but he's only got 4 at bats.
Right.
So it's he's makes such a big difference on the mound that that's where they need him, and they're so deep offensively that you know they don't really need him to hit. But you're right about the depth too on the staff. I do think it's a better staff than they've had there at sometimes in the past. But, it's not necessarily deep with overpowering arms. It never is. You know, that's just not how they build their staffs there. But I think this is the kind of staff that's well suited to win in this, you know, in this era. I think I've talked about this before. I mean, it's just guys who throw strikes and it's a good offense to go with it. I think that's actually a winning formula. And I wonder, you know, I mean, and that, again, I talk about my conversation with John Savage this weekend. You know, everyone was saying that the new bats would help UCLA. And his thought was, you know, we were already shutting people down with our arms. I mean, this did was hurt our bats. You know, I mean, we're still pitching great, but what does it matter? We can't score any runs.
That's funny. You can't give up less than 0 runs. So, if you're already shutting people down, you can't shut them down a whole lot more than they were. It's the Baseball America podcast with John and Aaron talking a little college baseball. Aaron, we have a UVA question I meant to read earlier. Let me see if I can find this. Ted Dintersmith, who I think had to go to UVA with that last name, He loves our podcast, probably not anymore that I made fun of his name. But Ted asks, is there any college team in 2011 that had as good a season, as good a weekend series as UVA just had against Clemson? And do we have any thoughts on this upcoming Virginia-Florida State series where that Friday night game, he said, should be a beauty with Gil Martin and Holtzen? As good as Gil Martin's been this year, I think that you and I both think that Holtzen's better.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, Holtzen is a guy that I think sometimes gets lost when you're looking at all the arms in this college draft class. You know, you're talking about the mid-90s guys like Cole and Perk and Barnes, and you know, it's a great group of power arms. But whenever I'm talking with scouting directors, and I've been running into them a lot lately, it seems like, because I guess I'm in the right parks. But
right.
They always bring up Holtzen's name too. You know, don't forget about Holtzen in that top 10 mix. You know, I mean, he can really pitch, and he's just, you know, his stuff's just a little better, and you know, that's gonna be a great matchup. I'm looking forward to that series. It's probably gonna be the end for weekend preview coming up next week, this week. But I agree. I think that's probably the most impressive series anyone's had this year, going on the road and sweeping Clemson. I mean, you know, I've been impressed with LSU sweeping a series at home against Fullerton, but it's a home series versus a road series, and Clemson's not an easy place to play, and unless you're UVA, apparently. Did you see that stat, John? UVA is now 17-4 against Clemson since 2004. It's hard to believe.
I did see that. That is almost impossible to believe. It's because Clemson's been good for most of that stretch. I mean, so is UVA, obviously, but Clemson just went to Omaha last year. I mean, they did have their regional streak lost in the middle of that, whatever year that was, 2008. But that's still stunning. I'm with you. That's stunning. We've talked a lot of ACC so far. Let's talk a little more SEC, Aaron, because the other big series of the weekend, we do have a lot of questions, but they're all about that UVA-Florida State series. But I think we've talked about that a little bit. The other big series was LSU against Cal State Fullerton. And Fullerton, you know, kind of playing all comers, had a very, you know, they had a loss to North Carolina in one game. They had a series win, I should say, on the road at TCU. But I think we all thought that, you know, boy, Fullerton's got all kinds of pitching depth, figuring things out offensively, taking on all comers, whereas LSU had kind of played a softer schedule. But A, the Tiger fans, unbelievable, have more than 27,000 people on hand for the weekend series against the Titans. And second of all, pretty impressive performance by LSU. Not just a score, not just to sweep the series. I mean, sweeping the series, they won two one-run games. That's impressive. But 24 runs on the Titans. Let's talk a little bit about how that's happening with LSU. It can't just be Mikey Mattook. It seems like there's that up and down the lineup. They're producing.
Yeah, they are. You know, and you really got to tip your cap to them. I think that's a great. Not, you know, it's obviously a great series sweep, and I'm surprised by it. You know, I think picked Fullerton to win that series on the road because I just thought their pitching was better, and their, you know, I thought their offense would perform, and you know, those are two close one run games Friday and Saturday, and then LSU just kind of blew them out, I think, on Sunday, you know, which hasn't been easy to do because Colin O'Connell's been great on Sundays this year for Fullerton, but LSU's offense is dangerous. You know, it's the newcomers. This was the number two recruiting class in the country for LSU this year, and you know, those guys are once again living up to their reputation. It seems like when LSU brings in a top recruiting class, like they did 3 years ago, and they had the number two class, they get results. You know, those guys, they perform right away. That year they went to Omaha, they won the national championship the next year. This year, you know, it's Jacoby Jones leading the team in hitting. It's Rafe Rimes, you know, junior college transfer. He's second on the team in hitting. You know, it's the two freshmen, Kurt McCune and Kevin Gossman, holding down the weekend rotation. Those guys really have been the key, I think, for LSU. They needed to be because LSU lost some key pieces last year. And you know, they still have some veteran guys back. We've talked about Austin Nola and Mikey Mattook and Tyler Hanover. I really like those guys. But you know, I think the Tigers needed their youngsters and their newcomers to do what they've done.
It seems like it's not just been the guys who were the hyped or the draft guys, like a Jacoby Jones was a big time deal. Like you said, it's been, or Gossman, it's been everybody. It's not one or two guys. It's a lot of those newcomers getting it all done together, which is impressive. And I think it speaks well of Palminieri's ability and that coaching staff's ability to get those guys ready to contribute from day one. It's one thing to have come in with some hype and some attention. It's another thing to actually go out and perform from day one. Does this make LSU I mean, they were already the favorite in the SEC West coming in, Aaron. Just looking at the rest of the SEC West, I mean, Arkansas, we still don't have the Razorbacks ranked. I'm sure you'll hear about that in the rankings this the poll this what am I trying to say, the chat. You'll hear about that in the chat this week. But to me, it seems like LSU is just still far and away the favorite in the SEC West. Is it as big a chasm as I think it is, or is Arkansas? Yeah, you got a chance to see Arkansas on Thursday. Is it closer maybe than I'm thinking it is?
Yeah. I think Arkansas is pretty good. I do. I mean, it's I do think LSU now has established itself as the clear-cut favorite in the West, whereas before I thought it was pretty close. But you know, but I believe in Arkansas. I think, you know, they were actually better than I expected them to be. More athletic. I mean, their lineup I think is very potent.
Yeah, they're scoring
Dominic
some runs.
Ficicello. Yeah, they are. And Dominic Ficicello, you talk about, you know, newcomers making a difference. That guy is a seriously dangerous hitter, and you know, we kind of knew he was coming in, but he's hit the ground running. You know, the day I saw him on Thursday, he was 4 for 5 with a double to left center and a double to right center, and it's just, you know, the ball comes off his bat really easy, and it's really fast, quick hands, and you know, I've talked to a lot of scouts who really really like that guy. I think he's going to be a premium pick in a couple of years, but. You know, but it's not just him, obviously. You know, Kyle Robinson has been a revelation for Arkansas. That guy he's hit a lot, and you know, he's very athletic. I was impressed watching him run around the bases. He can move. That team, I think, is certainly going to be a factor. You know, and they need Ryan Stanek to get well because he's been sick the last couple of weeks, and they've been worried there might be mono. You know, he's certainly a key piece as a freshman, but you know, DJ Baxendale has been good on Fridays,
and he hasn't
given
up
Nolan
a run
Sanburn.
Yet.
Yeah, that's right. He's been really good, and you know, they like Nolan Sanburn at the back of the pen. He's another freshman guy who's been, you know, up to 94, 95. So they've got a lot of talent there. But I think with these young teams, there will be bumps in the road. But you know, I think Arkansas can certainly make a push in the SEC West.
Yeah, Kyle Robinson, like you mentioned, I mean, this is just the guy who's, you know, been there and has, you know, he's a junior college transfer last year, but like you said, not a guy that there were big expectations for, and just having a tremendous year. You know, Colin Kuhn hasn't really hit for Arkansas yet. He's got a couple home runs, but yeah, Arkansas, again, I think it's a great point that this was a highly regarded recruiting class, number 8 recruiting class, and well, Ficicello was, what, like a 23rd round pick, but I think we thought he had a chance to go even higher. He was a top 10 round talent, but you know, again,
I think he was a top 100 guy. So I mean,
yeah, he was number
77.
He was number 77 on the top 100 last year. So I mean, this is a guy we thought had first 3 rounds talent, and has played like it so far for the Razorbacks. So really, the whole point with Arkansas not being ranked there, we've thought about Arkansas, we thought about long and hard about Oregon State, thought long and hard about UC Irvine. We couldn't really see dropping any of the teams. We dropped UCLA and Rice pretty much at the back of the rankings. You know, they're both still over 500. You'd like to see the Bruins, you know, win a series. They've lost 3 straight series. They've dropped accordingly. I guess it seems like the thing that's working against Arkansas, Irvine, Oregon State is just they haven't played even as good a schedule as UCLA, not to mention Rice. And wasn't that pretty much the consensus?
Yeah, that was what hurt them, is they didn't quite have that signature win. I mean, UC Irvine and Oregon State both have a win against UConn, and that's the best win that any of these teams have. And that's nice, you know, but it's just not quite enough. I mean, we kind of put UCLA and Rice on notice. We certainly debated knocking both those teams out of the rankings because, you know, you got to win, and I think dropping UCLA from preseason number 2 down to number 24 now, you know, I think that's showing everybody that, hey, you know, we're not just sitting idly by while they lose. You do have to win games,
right?
But you know, that said, their pitching staff is really good. It has pitched very well, we're kind of giving him one more week.
Aaron, we got a couple questions coming in on Twitter at Baseball America and on the Facebook. So let's answer a couple of podcast questions if you're good with that.
Yeah.
All right. Like I said, a couple of them are related to the UVA Florida State series. But you know, here's Japers, a longtime BA fan. Well, he wonders if, you know, you've seen a lot of Gerrit Cole. Anything about Cole's delivery make you nervous and give you Strasburg flashbacks? Aaron, I just was watching a little video of him, and you've seen him. It doesn't seem like his delivery's all that similar to Steven Strasburg's. But have you heard, talking about the scouting directors you talked to, any concerns about Cole?
No, not at all. And you know, everyone in fact seems to say that delivery's gotten a lot better, certainly than it was in high school.
Yeah, it was a, he had a very rough finish to his delivery in high school. I think he may have landed on a stiff front leg, if memory serves. But there was a little bit more effort in his delivery in high school than there is now, that's for sure.
Yeah, he smoothed it out, and you know, I don't want to get into talking about Strasburg's delivery and whether that was why he got hurt and all this stuff. I mean, sometimes pitchers just get hurt, you know, and the consensus about Strasburg was that his delivery was fine. You know, maybe it wasn't perfect, but you know, I don't know. I wouldn't want to say that anyone's having Strasburg
Flashbergs. I think you just coined a new term. Anytime a
flashbacks.
pitcher has questions about his mechanics, you're going to say flashbergs.
Yeah,
I think that
but.
might join. I'm going to have to make that a hashtag and see if we can spread that around.
But I will say that I think Cole's draft stock is getting pretty similar to where Strasburg's was as a junior. And I think Gerrit Cole is really, really good. He's the complete package. You know, it's he's always had that premium fastball, but he's really learned how to pitch with his slider and his changeup too. Those are both plus legit plus to plus plus pitches. I mean, he's you know, he's so composed now. He's so mature. He's just come a long way in all facets. I think the guy is special.
Agreed. Really big Gerrit Cole fan. Josh, I can't pronounce Josh's last name, asks on Twitter, is the Florida State UVA series the best the ACC has to offer? That answer appears to be yes. I mean, we have both. Those are the two highest ranked ACC teams right now. Aaron, do you think those are you know, the best two teams in the league? Is there anybody sniffing those two teams right now?
Well, I mean, you know, Clemson, I still think is the other team that's kind of in this mix as one of the top contenders in the ACC, and UVA just went down to Clemson and swept them. So I think clearly Clemson is behind those other two teams heading into this series.
Another here's a good question from Noah Wilson. No offense to Josh, not like that was a bad question. We just kind of asked and answered, counselor. But Noah Wilson asks, which player has surprised you the most so far? Someone who maybe wasn't a top echelon guy going into the year. Aaron, has there been a breakout guy for you? You know, nationally, I know it's kind of you're kind of have to pull one out of nowhere. But you've seen so much of the country already. Who stood out as being better than you expected so far?
Well, you know, Kyle Robinson is one guy that we kind of talked about. You know, that's a guy that really wasn't even on my radar coming into the year, and he's been outstanding. You know,
But Mark, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm sure
I was
there are
gonna say
others,
Mark
but off the top of my
suggest.
head, that can't really think of one.
I'm sorry to talk over you there for a second. I was gonna suggest Mark Pope at Georgia Tech. He didn't come out of nowhere. He was a very highly regarded guy at a high school. You know, we had some reports he was throwing 95, 96 in high school. But this guy's been just ridiculous for Georgia Tech so far. And the Yellow Jackets, 12-4. Have a couple of kind of head scratcher losses, you know, Georgia State and Georgia Southern. Those are competitive teams, and Georgia Tech is young. But the Yellow Jackets have been quite good so far, and their pitching depth's pretty impressive, Aaron. I would nominate Mark Pope. When you can
Yeah.
have him go on Friday, and you can come with Jed Bradley on Saturday, that's a and an unsigned fourth rounder and Matt Grimes going midweek. You know, and some of the bullpen depth they have. This freshman Dusty Isaacs out of Ohio, who's just been outstanding. 10 scoreless innings so far. Yeah, Luke Bard's been good out of their bullpen. They don't seem like they're really even missing the fact that Kevin Jacob isn't quite right yet. I don't know if Pope's a good suggestion for you, or is he almost too highly regarded coming in?
No, I think that's a really good suggestion. I mean, he's a guy who has certainly, you know, achieved above what would have been expected from him. And here's another name I'll throw out there. He's not a junior, he's not a draft eligible guy, but Kurt McCune at LSU. I mean, to me, maybe that's been the biggest surprise out of anybody. He was a guy that wasn't really featured as a key part of their recruiting class. I don't even think they listed him among their top 10 recruits on the form that they sent in to us. And he's their Friday starter. I think he's going Fridays. And he's been really good. He's got a, you know, a one, what is it, a 1.11 ERA. And he's just doing it with his fastball mostly. You know, he commands the fastball. It's kind of 88 to 91. It's got good deception. He works down in the zone, good angle. That's a guy that I've been really impressed with that I hadn't even heard of going into the spring.
That's a great point. I think you're right, because I don't think he's on their questionnaire, their recruiting questionnaire. Hughes McMurray asks, what do you think of the Gamecocks starting pitching so far as compared to last season? Is it enough to repeat? I think we've touched a little bit on the Gamecocks, but also Jackie Bradley and Christian Walker are on fire this season. Is there a better 3-4 combo in the NCAA at this point, Aaron? Best 3-4 combo in a lineup. Put you on the spot again. Jackie Bradley Jr. and Christian Walker are a pretty good one. Be tough to top that one. Does sound like Florida's middle of the lineup, though, still, especially with Preston Tucker really heating up lately. I might just go with the Gators. But South Carolina, it's hard to beat Jackie Bradley Jr. and Christian Walker. What's your take?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, as far as production, too, if we're not just talking about ability, but also production, I think you have to give the edge to Bradley and Walker. But, you know, I think you're right. Florida's group there with Tucker and Brian Johnson and Austin Maddox is talented. Those guys haven't really performed yet, except for Tucker. I think Bradley and Walker is a good choice there. I mean, I like Arizona State's lineup, part of their lineup, quite a bit. I think there's some good ones out there, but I think I'll go with Jackie and Christian Walker. That seems like a good choice.
Yeah, hard to bet against Jackie Bradley Jr. And then Kevin Leon Martin Jr. on Facebook asks, what are the differences between college baseball now and college baseball within the media? I feel like there just isn't enough of it on TV. I think we're going to agree with that, obviously, Aaron, but it seems like there's going to be more college baseball on TV this year than ever before.
Yeah, the SEC is having a Thursday night game of the week on ESPN or ESPN2 or one of their family of networks. And there'll be quite a few SEC games on ESPN, I think, on the weekends as well. And, there's certainly a lot of regional broadcasts that you can find. Depending on where you are and what kind of TV package you have, there's some options for you. But obviously, we all like to see a lot more nationally televised games like there were during the hockey strike a few years ago, and they needed replacement programming. And college baseball kind of had a chance there, and I guess it just didn't draw good enough ratings. And that's why we are where we're at.
Yeah, it does seem like there were more. I still think that, like you said, there's been more college baseball this year on TV. I mean, even the Fullerton TCU series, one or two of those games were on the Mountain West Network. If you have DirecTV and you get the sports package, those were on. But I think actually there's been more. I still think college baseball's gaining momentum on the national front. It seems like in terms of national media exposure and people knowing a little bit about it. And I definitely think the bats and the pitch clock and all the changes that are helping the game, the game's tempo are a big part of that, Aaron. I know I went to East Carolina this weekend. Liberty and Monmouth played a fairly crisp 4-3 game. You know, Monmouth dropped a couple pop flies. They weren't easy plays. They were both running plays, but still dropped fly balls. And that game took like 2 hours and 17 minutes. And the game afterwards, yeah. I couldn't stay for the whole game, but that game was already like in the fifth inning. I was an hour and 10 minutes in. So, and you can tell, I think the fans are still adjusting to the increased pace of the game. Have you gotten used to it? What's the feedback you've gotten just on the pace of the game, both from coming out scouts? I mean, I just had some Twitter conversation with a scout yesterday about how much better it is for them just from evaluating and the time of game. What's the feedback you're getting on the coaches just in terms of the pace of the game and how quickly they're being played?
Yeah, you're dead on. It's been a lot faster, and I think the numbers have borne that out. I'll have to ask our friends at College Splits for an update on just how fast the pace of the game has been compared with last year. But it seems like it's been a lot faster, and I know for the first weekend it was about at least 15 minutes a game or 20 minutes a game faster. So it's really been a marked difference, and I do think that's good for the sport's long-term health, even though, you know, you just have to plan it accordingly and get your hot dog in the sixth innings. You have time to finish it before the game ends.
Aaron, last question. You've been to a lot of games lately. What is there one thing that has stood out to you, whether it's a player's performance or just and you saw a lot of great pitching this weekend with Matt Barnes and the Garrett Cole near-perfect game. Was there an impression from this weekend's games that didn't make it on the blog that you, or even one that did make it on the blog or on your Twitter account that you wanted to pass on?
Well, I'm going to have a three strikes chock full of impressions from the weekend coming up here today, but we'll touch on Arkansas. We'll touch on Georgia, which I think is a big story from this weekend. You know, they showed a lot of character. You know, in the wake of this Jonathan Taylor tragedy, really, they've really played with a lot of intensity and passion, and they went to the West Coast and won three straight games out there, beat Gerrit Cole. You know, I think Georgia is resurgent, and that's, I think, a major storyline from this weekend. I also saw Louisville and Pepperdine. You know, Louisville finally got the bats going a little bit on Saturday and Sunday. The bats weren't great today. I saw them on Friday, but they've got really good pitching, and Pepperdine really cannot hit. And I think Pepperdine scored maybe two runs all weekend. So, you know, it could be a long year for the Waves, but Louisville, I think, will be competitive in the Big East with that pitching staff.
Yeah, the ECU folks were talking about Pepperdine's lack of offense as well. But next week we have more conference play gets started around the country with the Southeastern Conference, especially loading up. We got Florida at LSU next weekend, Aaron. So there's a that's a pretty good Florida State and Virginia and Florida and LSU, a couple of pretty great weekend series to look forward to next week, and then sooner or later the West Coast teams will start playing conference games. Which, you know, for me matter more. I don't see why they shouldn't matter more to people, but I don't think the tournament committee, I don't think the Division I baseball committee sees it that way, and they don't see it that way in basketball, it doesn't seem like anymore. So I think it does matter though for baseball. That's what everyone's playing toward, and really in a lot of ways this part of the season, it's not spring training, but it's a little bit close to it. I mean, I talked to a column I'm going to write, Aaron. I mean, maybe you talked to the UConn guys about this, but especially for the northern teams, I mean, they say the first time that, you know, the first weekend of the year is the first time they're outside. It's the first time they step on a dirt. It's the first time they step on a dirt mound. It's the first time their hitters hit and they're not in a gym. I mean, I just don't think you can quantify. I'm not sure what the replacement level of a northern player stepping outside for the first time is. I don't think it can be quantified, but right now, though, everybody's played. That's one thing with the unified start date. Everyone's played a month, and when we start getting the conference season, I think you really see the teams that are making progress, teams that are getting better, teams that got busy living, and teams that are going to get busy dying. And if you're UCLA, you better get busy living sooner. You're not going to be ranked in our top 25 anymore.
Which is hardly the worst thing I'm sure that they're thinking about right now, but yeah, I mean they need to get going for their own good, and you know,
If
if
they don't
that's a
get
team that
going.
had national championship aspirations and wants to host a regional, and you know, after 4 weeks they're in no position to host a regional.
That's what I'm saying. If they don't get going, the Pac-10 is such that, yes, USC and Washington are probably not regional teams. The rest of that league might be. The rest of that league looks regional caliber, and, you know, still pending the NCAAs and ruling on Arizona State trying to appeal that. But, I mean, it's going to be tough for UCLA if they don't pick it up by the time conference season starts. You just can't. They're just too, that league is too tough for them to keep playing this way. So we kind of started talking about UCLA. We're finishing talking about UCLA. And Aaron, I'm sure you'll have more questions about them and everyone else in the chat. So get ready for that. Enjoyed the podcast, and thanks so much. We'll look for you, obviously, on the chat, on the blog, and on Twitter at AaronFit. I believe you were last check, you were just nudging under 3,000 followers. So if you're
I
not
just I
following,
just
Aaron.
squeaked past it. I just squeaked past it. I'm at 3,001 now.
Outstanding. I can't believe I haven't picked up more people tweeting constantly about Carolina basketball, but it hasn't happened.
Yeah,
So
shocking.
that, as they say, is what are. For Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you next week on the Baseball America College Podcast. Until then, so long, everybody.